Sunday House Call is presented by Robillard Hearing Centers. Hearingisbelieving.com.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 426 for this December the 30th, 2012. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call, coming to you live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa, and taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and our long-distance number, 1-800-580-2372. And being the end of the year, I am not doing best healthcare stories of the year. I am not giving you the wisdom of the last year. I find that it's quite arbitrary considering the tens upon thousands and thousands of clinical and research studies that are done each and every year to come up with one or two or 10 or 20 of those to sort of represent the entirety of science and medicine seems to me to be a bit arbitrary. And the reasoning is that with science and with medical research, it is baby steps. I think that would be the word to use for how research is done, wherein you have these obscure, sometimes what could be considered to be unintelligible or questioning why they even did this type of study. And really, it is all these little things that tend to build up a big picture. And just as when you're reading a book or trying to follow directions, each individual direction may not make sense when you start off. But when you read the entire instruction booklet, it all comes together and you're able to have an endpoint and actually build something or develop something. And it's very similar with regards to research that is done, which is why when we are faced with people and advertisements that are making claims, and I know I tend to harp on this, but it's still out there, ladies and gentlemen, and it's still being promoted everywhere, frankly, and on this radio station as well. You have advertisements and advertorials and paid for announcements that promote a particular product without necessarily being scrutinized in a way that would be very helpful for us to determine whether or not this indeed is something that is worthwhile or whether the information being presented to you is simply a means of selling you something and answering your questions in a way that make you want to hear or at least receiving information and hearing what you want to believe. And that to me is, in terms of what we see year after year, the message that I try and get out to people, in that on this show, we don't sell anything. We don't provide, I make it a point to not sponsor or promote any particular product. I don't do advertisements on this or any other radio station for any particular product, even if it's something that I would use, because frankly, to me, what is important and what should be important to any particular health show that you listen to is the credibility of the show. That is it trying to sell you something, even if it's trying to present some information to you? Or is it providing the information to you for you to make your own decisions without the host or the people that are coming on the show to promote a particular financially advantageous endeavor that they are involved in? And I would be proud to say that now coming up to our eighth year of doing this show, that I think what we've done is we've tried to provide to you credible information. I can't be accused of representing any company. I can't be accused of promoting a particular treatment. And I am always on the lookout for new information and evidence that sometimes, if we go back 8 years where we may have discussed a particular way to treat an illness or prevent a particular outcome, that has changed over the 8 years. And we adopt those changes on the basis of the evidence presented to us, as opposed to clinging to beliefs or habits that we tend to think of as being sacrosanct. So to that end, and one of the things that I've been having discussions with my patients now is when they come in, and we've talked about this before as well, is when they come in for complete physical exams, and I tell them that it's completely unnecessary. In fact, that when someone is otherwise healthy, without any specific complaints, that the likelihood is I'm going to hurt you by doing a complete physical exam, by finding some weird things or findings that clinically have likely no relevance, but now you'll be subjected to all kinds of poking and prodding and tests that in the end will unlikely produce anything beneficial in terms of preventing disease or enhancing your life. And so it becomes one of looking at what the evidence tells us for your specific age, what you are at risk for at that age, and doing what is the most appropriate thing, as opposed to doing what I like to call putting on a show. That is, sure, I can do a complete physical exam on you, and the act of doing that may make you feel better, but in the end, it's still doing something to someone that is unnecessary and that really can cause potential harm. So I take the time to talk about this with patients when they come in, and we review the evidence for what is helpful and what isn't helpful. And as I discussed last week, there are some what we call poems, and these are situations where it is more practice-oriented, evidence-based, patient-oriented evidence that actually matters, which is what POEM stands for. And so, you know, some of the stuff that they ask questions about, and that, you know, looking at the evidence doesn't really provide something. And so, for example, you know, we've had people call up about treatment for osteoporosis and are on certain medications called bisphosphonates. And there's a whole bunch of different ones, and in no specific order, you know, the names that are involved are usually, there are a whole host of different names. I'm tempted not to mention the brand names, but nevertheless, these particular medications are used to treat osteoporosis. And one of the questions is, do oral bisphosphonates, which are the most common medications used to treat osteoporosis, do they increase the risk of atypical hip and femur or upper leg fractures in postmenopausal women? And what they found when they looked at the evidence is that if it's used for longer than 5 years, it's associated with a significantly increased risk of hip fractures, atypical hip and leg fractures in postmenopausal women, and that there is little, if any, benefit of extended use beyond 5 years in reducing the risk of typical fractures in the hip or in the back for postmenopausal women. And so it's the best available evidence we have for some time. And in this case, clinicians should consider, and this is what they say, clinicians should consider stopping bisphosphonates for most women after 5 years, except in those at high risk of fracture. For example, those taking steroids over the long term. And they go into even further information about it. So again, these are the type of questions that are most helpful when people come in. So if I have an elderly lady coming in, she's on bisphosphonates, it's now 5 years, you do a bone density and she's now not at high risk of fracture, you can stop that medication. Reduce, again, taking medications without evidence is going to cause harm. And taking medication when there is no evidence to support the use of it over the long term also can cause harm. So these are the type of things that I like to focus on. And I hope this small introduction was helpful for you. I have other poems I'd like to go over today as well. Just, you know, being at the end of the year, I think these are what's more significant in terms of encapsulating the body of evidence over the past year, as opposed to looking at each individual study that may or may not have had some relevance. We're going to take a small break and come back with your calls. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. Opening to discuss anything you'd like to talk about today. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
It's a pleasure to be here, because I was just in Las Vegas, so I need the money. I lost a lot of money. I really did. I mean, I get them back at the buffet, don't get me wrong. $9.95, all you can eat. We'll see who wins this friggin' handout, won't we? I do believe I have blackjack. I was at the prime rib counter going, hit me again. The buffet manager was horrified. You should have seen him. He looked like a deer caught in the headlights. Get the prime rib back in the kitchen. Finally, he just gave me my money back. Here's your $1,000. Get out!
For those who went, that's John Panette. Absolutely funny, funny guy. Saw him this year in September when he was at the NAC. If you get a chance to watch him, you know, YouTube videos or even his DVDs, really, really funny, clean comedy. Really very, very funny guy. Going to go to line one and speak to Nicole in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin. I would like to know, I have a problem here. I'm experiencing hair loss like I never had in my life.
Okay.
Just simply by combing, not even brushing my hair.
Now, is this all over the head, or is there specific areas where you
seems all over the head?
Okay, well, one of the most common causes of hair loss in women is something that is a result of male hormones that are produced by women as well, and these shut down the hairs and the hair follicles, and they end off falling out just like in men. Ideally, what you would want to do is first to see your physician to see if there are no other reasons for the hair loss.
May I mention something?
Yes.
I am on Synthroid medication, and the oncologist lowered it some time ago from 150 microgram to 125.
Right.
Could it be a reason for it? I have...
Unlikely, because usually when you're checking thyroid function, you're looking at what we call the TSH level, and if that level is normal, then it means then your thyroid hormone levels are normal as well.
So, and number two, I've had, maybe that's confirm your shot. I've had several cortisone shots for the past year and a half.
That also won't affect hair loss.
Oh, that won't affect hair loss.
Especially if it's a cortisone shot, because the dose of the medication is actually quite low. So it's unlikely to affect it. And cortisone in and of itself is not going to affect that. Ideally, what you would want to do...
Yeah.
And there are treatments for women who are experiencing hair loss, because about 80 or 90% of the time it is because of genetic factors, and also, again, it's called androgenetic alopecia.
But that, it comes all of a sudden just like that?
It can happen like that. The other thing to understand is how hair grows. Mm-hmm. Hair grows in three different phases. Mm-hmm. So if we think of the hair on your head, 80 to 90% of the time, your hair, most of the hairs are growing. There's some hairs that won't be and others that will be. But 80 to 90% of all the hair follicles on your scalp are growing.
Yeah.
That usually goes for 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
After that, at the end of this 2 to 3 years, the growth stops and the hair follicles end up resting. So they have hairs coming out of them, but they're not growing. The follicle is just in a resting state.
I see.
And then after 3 or 4 months of being in the resting state, you lose that hair.
Okay.
And then the next growth cycle begins. So you can also be experiencing a period where a lot of the hair follicles have shed the hairs, and then the hair will start to grow back. But that has to be looked at by either a dermatologist or your family doctor to look at the hairs on the head, look at the hair follicles to see if they are active. But there is a treatment for hair loss in women. The medication is called spironolactone. And the medication blocks the male hormones that stimulate hair loss. And it's very safe to use in women. It's actually used as a medication to also prevent potassium loss when treating for high blood pressure and using a water pill. So
it is
something that your physician can prescribe if the diagnosis is because of the male hormone that is causing you to lose that hair.
So only by looking at the hair follicle, the physician would know.
Yes, because usually when there is hair loss,
which was,
and the term for hair loss is called alopecia.
When
you have hair loss, if the follicles are not functioning anymore, you don't see them. They almost disappear, and there's no hairs coming out of them.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you see a lot of follicles on the scalp with small hairs coming out, it means that those follicles are either active or they're sort of in a slumber and not functioning very well. But again, it really requires looking at the scalp, because the hair loss in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that this is going to be a permanent hair loss. You have to look at the scalp to see what's happening in order to make that determination.
Can I ask you to spell the medication for me?
Is spironolactone?
Yeah.
It's S-P-
Yeah.
I-R-O-
O-
N-O-
N-O-
Spironolactone. L-A-C-T-O-N-E.
Okay. Well, I appreciate... I always appreciate your advice, you know. It's not the first time I call you.
You're very welcome, Nicole.
And may I wish you a happy new year.
Thank you, and you too.
Thanks very much, Dr. Dorkin.
All the best.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. And a good afternoon to Evelyn in Nepean.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
You were talking about atrial fibrillation the weekend before last.
Yes.
And one woman phoned in, she's 86, she mentioned I don't know how to pronounce it, ambulation, is that the right, of the right chamber of the heart?
Ablation.
Oh, ablation.
Yes.
Okay. And what does that really mean, an operation or what?
Ablation is when they take a catheter that runs through the artery into the heart. They run it through the into the heart itself, so they will usually run it through a vein into the heart to get into the right side of the heart. And then they will, at the tip of this catheter, they have a little electric probe, something that literally burns or damages the tissue. And what ablation means is that you're destroying a very small area that may be responsible for the irregular heartbeat. And so that's what ablation does. Now, does ablation work for everybody? No, not necessarily. And also ablation is very invasive, as we just mentioned, because you're going through somebody's vein, going into the heart, and it can cause significant bleeding or damage, especially if the person has a propensity for bleeding. So you have to be very careful to select the right patient and for those patients that might respond to it. But there are other treatments for atrial fibrillation, as Dr. Gulab had mentioned when he was on a couple of weeks ago, and that are available.
Yes. Well, I'm on metoprolol and SAA, 81 milligrams.
Okay.
And it seems to be helping. I've had one or two attacks, but I think it's doing its job. And
well, as long as you're finding that you're functioning well and that they're monitoring you, and that I'm sure you have follow up from time to time when you see the cardiologist.
Well, it's been I guess once a year.
Yeah.
I went.
And they found things were the heart. Is your heart rate regular? Is that what the metoprolol is doing now? Are you finding that it's regular?
Well, I was getting quite often like an attack, and I would know when it was happening because I would feel faint as if I was going to pass out. Mine was quite severe.
Right.
And you were saying some people don't even know they're having it.
Right.
Why is that? Are they stronger or more healthy than me or what?
Well, for any arrhythmia, it depends on each individual. So the answer is that for some, even though the heart may be in atrial fibrillation, their heart function still remains normal. And so they don't have a disruption in blood flow. They don't feel anything happening. Their brain is still getting enough oxygen from the blood flow to the brain. So for those individuals, they don't really notice it, and they don't even know what's going on. Oh. But as we get older, it becomes, you know, we become much more sensitive to the changes in our heart rhythm.
Oh, yes.
And so you tend to feel it a lot more.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for your answer. You're very good at explaining everything.
Well, thank you very much, Evelyn.
Okay, and you have a good Happy New Year.
And you too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now. We're going to take a small break, and when we come back, we have Chantal in Ottawa who would like to talk about complications in lower back. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call, and we will be back in just a few minutes after the news. When you
kiss me. 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night.
The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment.
Actually, they have a buffet in Las Vegas. It's called the Oz Buffet. It's the Wizard of Oz theme, and it's a buffet. You walk up, and it's the Emerald City, and it's an all-you-can-eat buffet. I ran to it. Get out of the witcher, out of the doctor, out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light. Fine ribs and pork chops and scampi. Oh, my. Fine ribs and pork chops and scampi. Oh, my.
Oh, we go to line three and welcome Chantal from Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Hi, good morning. Hi. I mean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First of all, I want to say, you know, Happy New Year to you. And
thank
I do
you,
listen
you too.
To your show quite regularly.
Thank you.
But I am a first-time caller.
Oh, welcome.
So I'm a little nervous.
But don't be nervous.
So I lost my family physician. He left to go to the military.
Okay.
And I was with him for about 10 years. so I was diagnosed pretty much just before he left because I was having a lot of lower back pain.
Okay.
And would sometimes become kind of paralyzed mm-hmm. for like up to 48 hours at a time.
Okay.
So they did a X-ray and an MRI, and they discovered that I had a condition called spondylosis.
Mm-hmm.
They also named another thing, which was called spondylolisthesis.
Right.
As well, I guess this condition will come with osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's my condition. I don't know if that happens for everybody.
Do you have osteoporosis as well? Is that what they
mentioned? I do. Yeah. So there's bone degeneration. So I lose height because I was quite tall, about 5'11",
right.
And in the past 6 years, I'm now down to about 5'8¾".
Wow.
I'm 37, so I'm very young.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able to successfully find another physician because it's a little difficult to find somebody in your area, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of places when you walk in, even to a walk-in clinic, they'll say, you know, we're just not taking any more new patients.
Right.
Even when I've brought in my MRI saying like, you know, please, I need someone to help me kind of stabilize this condition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the hospital about once a year, just because I'm told not to run, jump, or fall. And of course I have children, so sometimes
yeah.
those things happen. And then I'm just put on morphine for about a day, and then released with morphine, which I won't take.
Right.
I do take it when I'm in there because it's very uncomfortable and walking is difficult and they want me to get back on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
But this only happens about once a year. Usually I can go for months feeling fine.
Okay.
I'm not heavy. I'm very average weight. Mm-hmm. So I am told to keep my midsection strong.
Right.
I've tried acupuncture, and I was also given physiotherapy through the hospital for some time.
Okay.
But it was unsuccessful for me. It was very painful, as well as the exercises. So I'm just looking for any suggestions because I am young and I have children.
Right.
And I don't want to gain weight. Like I'm told, don't run, don't jump.
Yeah, that's...
You know, not too physical, but I'm trying to stay thin, which is difficult when I can't do the physical activities that I was allowed to do before. So that's also a concern, like
okay.
weight gain,
sure.
things like that. Mm-hmm.
So,
and I'm wondering if there's anything over the counter, you know, other than morphine that I should be taking at my age for maybe like bone density or do you have any suggestions on pain maintenance? I do have pain
sure. Well, the first thing I wanted to ask, just to get a bit more clarification, did you had a bone density done and it showed osteoporosis? Is that what happened?
No, they did an MRI 1 year and then did an MRI 2 years later.
Okay.
And it had moved from like the S and L section up to more, I guess it goes like 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. in your back. So 4, 5, 6, I guess when you have a back problem, it can move up. So it originally started in the S and L sections.
Right.
Where it was kind of slipped, and then now it's moving up to like 5, 4, and 3. There's some degeneration there as well. Like they can see it when they did the second MRI.
Okay.
So there's some more movement.
Okay. So what needs to be determined is whether there is osteoporosis, because osteoporosis is not diagnosed by MRI. Osteoporosis is done by what's called a bone mineral densitometry, which can be done at a lot of the imaging centers, because if that indeed is the case, if you have premature osteoporosis, the question mm-hmm. then has to be, why is this happening to someone who's 37 years old? And so there's a bunch of stuff that needs to be done. And if it is osteoporosis, there are medications that can be used to, and this is answering your other question, to reverse the process of this bone loss. Because if you're losing bone mass, that is, you're getting degeneration of the disc so early in your life, there has to be some reason to lose 3 inches, almost 3 inches in height. Yeah. It's quite significant, especially at your age.
Yep.
Are you having normal cycles? Is your period regular?
Very regular.
So that's mm-hmm. okay. So you're not
very heavy. I mean, it has changed.
Okay.
But yes, it's very regular. Everything else about me is quite normal, other than back pain, and I can become... See, they've explained to me that the spondylosis, like the fracture in the lower back, is what is causing disc degeneration on my other levels. That's what I've been told.
Right. But the issue, though, is why is this happening in the first place? Because there has to be some mechanism that's led to this degeneration of the bone. Right.
So which is a fracture. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, again, there are different things that can do this. There are autoimmune diseases that can cause... spondylosis and damage to the bones. There are hormonal influences that can influence bone growth and bone maintenance. Mm-hmm. So it just seems to me that the complete evaluation has not been done. There's been a focus on your back, and there's been physical findings and clinical findings.
Mm-hmm.
But the question then is what has led to those clinical findings and outcomes.
And they're unsure.
And
they're saying it's either being very athletic as a child. They've given me a few different, they're saying it could have been your athletic. They said it could have been my fall. I had a fall, so that there was a fracture.
Right, but were there blood mm-hmm. tests done to evaluate, for example, autoimmune diseases?
Nothing.
So you haven't seen a rheumatologist or endocrinologist?
Nothing.
Okay, so those...
And I've just been told, here's morphine
control
the pain.
I won't take it. Yeah, I'm not happy with this story, Chantal.
I don't have a family doctor, so that's kind of something should be...
Okay, to answer that question, what you should be able to do mm-hmm. is, depending on where you are in the city, there's two locations. There's the West End and there's the East End.
Okay.
There is the Family Medicine Center at Melrose, which is connected to the Ottawa Civic Hospital. A family medicine center. It's a teaching center, so they have family doctors, they have residents. It's the same place that I would, I did it in Montreal, but where we would learn family medicine and you'd have be supervised. And the care is actually quite good. Sometimes it's even more than what you'd get at a regular physician's office because the residents are learning, they're learning to do proper evaluation. So they're supervised by the staff there that are involved in the patient's mm-hmm. care. So, mm-hmm. and I know that they don't refuse patients. So you may want to call them there. It's the Family Medicine Center at Melrose. It's attached to the Ottawa Civic Hospital. It's part of the University of Ottawa. And you mm-hmm. may be mm-hmm. able to find somebody there to take a look and see what's going on and not have to start searching for family doctors everywhere.
Right. Yeah, no, I wasn't sure if he'd be able to help me. Like I thought, well, maybe there's, you know, some vitamins I can take, or maybe he has other different ways.
Yeah,
the
problem though is, for the pain, there mm-hmm. are different, for pain management, mm-hmm. yes, there are different ways to mm-hmm. approach that. So mm-hmm. if we talk about pain management, mm-hmm. again, it does involve getting yourself a family doctor because using morphine or narcotic mm-hmm. medications, mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. a huge fan of that. Mm-hmm. There, for pain management, it usually involves... a combination of things. So for that combination would be using either an anti-inflammatory combined with acetaminophen or Tylenol. And also I like using a medication called pregabalin or the brand name is called Lyrica because it's the only one that's out there. So I'll use the brand name. And they're not habit forming. Lyrica actually is used a lot in post-operative recovery. I know I used it after my knee replacement surgery and I didn't have to use narcotics at all after my surgery. When you combine those medications, it makes you a little bit tired. So you take it at night, it helps you sleep, it reduces your pain sensation and manages that back pain. And especially if you're having it only once a year where it ends up being a problem, that would be...
Hospitalized is usually about once a year and then it's just a morphine drip because there's some concern too around the bowel apparently because the lower back is so close to that area.
Well, that's why I think that you need to have a good evaluation done.
Well, why don't I start with that?
Yeah, because I think focusing just on the back may be the symptom of something else.
Okay.
And unless that something else is diagnosed, you end up suffering with this forever without because a lot of these things, if you find out what they are, you can treat them and reverse the process or at least stop the process from progressing so that, you know, by the time you're 50, you're still being able to walk around and not having a back that is in such terrible shape.
That's a concern for me is, will I be paralyzed? That's kind of a concern. I'm fine. Like I said, I'm healthy. I walk. I do everything.
Right.
But there's times where,
it's just that loss of, it's just that loss of bone height is really disconcerting.
Yeah.
Going from 5'11 to 5'8, that's...
5'8 and 3/4.
Yeah. So that's...
In a short span.
Yeah, and that's something that I think really warrants more evaluation as opposed to just treating the symptoms when they happen. And, and you know, when you don't know what's causing it, that to me is a concern. And so really what they would be doing is there's an initial blood workup that's done. There may be a bone density that'll be done to look at that. And also referral to a rheumatologist would be the next step, especially if there's been damage to the bones, to try and diagnose if there is a condition that has led to this damage to the back.
Okay. Well, I'll start at the Family Medicine Center and I'll go from there. And I appreciate you taking my call. And again, Happy New Year to you and thank you.
Thank you, Chantal, and all the best to you. Sure. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we have Louise in Ottawa who'd like to talk about pain on the right side of the neck. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call and we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin. Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Lying awake in my hospital room, Silence Creek Parkway is my only view, and the doctor just came by and told me the news. I need a second opinion.
You see, Indian food's too spicy. It is spicy. Spicy's a relative term, I know that. Spicy can mean a lot of things. Spicy could mean, ooh, geez, you know, that burnt my tongue a little bit. Or it could mean, ah! Would you like some water? Ah! No, thanks, I always scream at the table. Ah! It's too hot. I had that curry chicken. It went through my colon like a Japanese bullet train.
Five to one talk, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And a good afternoon to Louise in Ottawa.
Yes, Dr. Dworkin?
Yes.
Yes. I've had a bad neck for 3 years. It started a little bit slowly, and at the beginning it was on both sides, with the left side being less serious.
Okay.
Eventually, with acupuncture, the left side got fixed up, but the right side isn't. It's extremely painful, and if I didn't take any medication, I'd have it 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the last few years, last 3 years, let's say, I've stopped writing, reading, knitting, computer. I mean, basically, all these things where my neck, when it gets static, it's worse.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to start from the little, you know, at the base of the skull, at the back, we seem to have like a little indentation
there. Yeah.
That seems to be the beginning of it. And sometimes it's just there and it hurts so much. It's so deep. And anyway, I rub it with all kinds of oils and ointments and all kinds of things. But sometimes it's there, but also like along the side of the spinal column. And it's like a bunch of nerves or tendons or something. There seems to be like cords in there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all these oils and everything, and I bought a massager and all kinds of things. I've tried a lot of acupuncture because I just came back from China, and I have some in Canada with or without electricity. I've tried physio, chiro for 6 months, three times a week for 2 months, twice for 2 months, once for 2 months. I've tried a lot. I'm getting to the point where I think, well, what's this? You know, like, I mean, what kind of a life do I have?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going to spend the rest of my days feeling pain like this every day, well, what's the use? So I figured, you know, at first I used to take Tylenol and it worked and didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I'd be careful because I'd be, oh, no more than eight a day. And I leave the same, all these pills, I've taken them all. But at some point there in the last few days, I thought, well, heck with these quantities of painkillers, or I'm going to take as much as it takes because I'm not going to hurt like this anymore. So, you know, like, but like, what do we do about this? I mean, I did work in front of a computer for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of lifting in my life, a lot of moving by myself. Maybe it's a strain on the neck. I've worked hard, but I've got to get rid of this.
Mm-hmm. So my first question is, has this been evaluated? Has there been anything done to determine the source of the damage?
Well, the source is like what I say, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I just said.
Right, but has there been any imaging study done, or, you know, X-ray of the neck? Or
well, I have a cervical spine. Is that for the neck?
Yes.
Height and alignment of the cervical vertebrae are normal. There is no cervical rib present.
Okay.
Moderate, pardon me?
No, I'm listening.
Moderate DDD change is noted at both the C5-6 and C6-7 levels, with disc space narrowing and degenerative spur formation. There does not appear to be significant facet joint OA. Impression C5 and 6 and 6. C6-7 DDD.
Right, so some degenerative disc disease in those areas. But that really wouldn't be causing that kind of pain that you're experiencing, considering that you're describing it starting at an area that we call the posterior nuchal line on the back of the head, and that it runs down. Does it run down to your right shoulder and down the back as well?
Yeah, but not as active a pain.
Okay.
When I was taking this acupuncture in China, they feel here and they know exactly where to touch, you know. And sometimes when I'm rubbing with these oils, trying to get these cords flattened, I go down a little bit, about 4 inches long. I feel it, and then near my right shoulder also.
Okay.
But that's not active pain. It's like when I touch it.
Right. So I think what you're describing is certainly sounds like, as you mentioned, it's muscle and tendon that is giving you this pain, especially in the direction that it's running. It sounds like what we call the trapezius muscle, which is a muscle that attaches to the area you mentioned in the back of the head. It runs to the shoulder and also runs down the back. It's almost a diamond-shaped muscle. It's quite a large muscle.
Yeah.
So the issue then becomes one of, having suffered with this for 3 years, what can we do to alleviate a lot of the discomfort, relax the muscle a bit, and give you back your mobility and ability to do the activities that you've wanted to do for quite some time?
Yeah, the only thing that I seem to be able, and I swim every day, I've taken the aquatherapy, chronic pain aquatherapy, yoga, I mean, you name it, I've done it.
Okay. So the medications that you've used, and you said you used recently, you said it does help alleviate the pain that you have from time?
Well, it all depends. It seems to be that if I use something and I use it for a while, then I have to change to something else because it doesn't seem to continue helping.
Okay.
But and one thing that happens too is like when I sleep, and I'm scared to go to sleep, I try to sleep sitting up because when I wake up, it's worse, you know, like the worst, because I don't know, when I get up, it just hurts so much. Like this morning when I got up, I took two Tylenol, three with codeine. Mm-hmm. Now, I got that just recently because they're not too generous with those.
Right.
And I only got 30, so I'm very, very stingy with them. Anyway, I took two of those, and it didn't seem to help, so I took one and three Tylenols of arthritis later on. And this afternoon, at the beginning of the afternoon, I thought, there's no way I'm going to feel pain this afternoon. I took two Aleves and one Tylenol. And now that was all afternoon. Now it's 5 o'clock. I'm starting to feel it a little bit underneath there. You know what I mean?
Okay. So my recommendation is that I'm not a huge fan of taking lots of pills for pain, especially if it's in one area only. So the answer to this is... there are two separate things that can be done. One is there is a topical agent that can be used on the skin that will penetrate through the skin and provide an anti-inflammatory effect. It's called Voltaren Emol Gel.
I got that.
Okay. The other is that there is a compounding pharmacy in Ottawa that will actually put a lot of the medications that you take by mouth into a base that's then applied to the skin and give you likely a much better effect with less side effects. And what I'll do is... I'm going to give you the name of the pharmacy off the air because I don't want to single out one over another. And your physician can literally prescribe the medications that you found are helpful, but instead of taking them by mouth, they'll be put into a gel or a salve that you then apply to the skin three or four times a day that'll penetrate into the area that hurts the most and give you some pain relief. And that's what I think would be a good thing to try first, as opposed to taking a lot of the medications by mouth, because as you mentioned, there are side effects and they don't tend to work as well over time.
Yeah, that's right. But I do have arthritis in my right hip, but with arthritis...
Okay, Louise, we actually are at the end of the show.
So we
have to stop right now, but I wish you a happy new year and stay on the line, and Ted will be able to give you the name of the pharmacy. My thanks to everyone this past year for calling Sunday House Call. Ted Raymond for producing Sunday House Call. And we will be back next week with another edition of Sunday House Call. Everyone have a happy new year, and we'll be speaking to you then. I've got the most, and tomorrow I'll guess you can box as well.